I was not quite ready to come up here yet. Good to have everyone back this evening. Glad you came back to hear the second part of our lesson from this morning. Even though it doesn't really go with this morning's lesson, it sort of complements it very well, I hope. That is our lessons on parables as we continue. We're getting very close to the end of this series of studies. Now, we're in the last few days of the life of Jesus on this earth, and the parables that he told then were parables that were so exactly urgent that I think we can see why he told these particular parables in the last few days of his life on earth. He knew his time on the cross was coming very quickly. He had only a few more days to prepare the disciples for the eventual loss of him on this earth and their eternity in heaven, and also to help them understand how important it was for them to continue to serve him faithfully until their death. And so the parables are very, very urgent, and they are very very concise and very clear. He was not pulling any punches at that period of time. And tonight we're going to look at three parables on remaining alert. Starting in chapter 24, and there's an unfortunate chapter break that leads into chapter 25. Unfortunate because it cuts off one of the three parables that all go together, I believe, in this series of lessons in Matthew. So if you have your Bibles open to Matthew chapter 24, we're going to start this evening close to verse 42, where Jesus begins and says, "Therefore be on the alert, for you do not know which day your Lord is coming." And when he says the word "therefore," he's going back to Matthew chapter 24, earlier in the idea when Jesus was talking about a second coming. Everything that Jesus said about the second coming that we looked at last time we were together, understanding that last week Robert preached, but the week before that was when we were last together in this class. We were talking about that major discourse that appears in all three of the Synoptic Gospels of the second coming of Christ and then the destruction of Jerusalem. And so Jesus is talking about now the second coming portion of that, the very last of it. He says, "Therefore, since the Lord is coming again someday," is the meaning that he gives there, "since the Lord is coming again someday, you be on the alert, for you don't know what day your Lord is coming." You don't know what day, you don't know what hour, you don't know what time. And then he's going to tell three parables that help us to understand what he means when he says, "Be on the alert." And whenever you say, "Be on the alert," we have this idea that we basically mean, pay close attention, right? And that's exactly what he means. But the thing is this paying attention is going to be a lifestyle endeavor. It's not something that happens just once or twice for a little short period of time. Usually when somebody tells us to remain on the alert, we think it's just a temporary thing, right? Until whatever it is that's happening is over with. I remember how many times, living on the plains, how many times we had a tornado alert, you know, a tornado warning or tornado watch. So they say, be on the alert. Bad weather's in your area. So as long as the bad weather's in the area, we can stay alert, right? But that's only usually a few hours or at the most a half a day. And then everything passes by, then it's clear weather again, you go on. But what Jesus is saying is you need to be alert today and tomorrow and the day after and the day after that and the day after that. And next week, and next month, and next year, and next decade, and to the end of your life, you've got to be alert. Because you never know when Christ is coming again. And wouldn't it be nice if we did know exactly when Jesus was coming? Because then we'd all be ready, right? We'd know he's coming. We'd get ready at least just 5 minutes before he shows up. But it's not that way, and Christ didn't want it to be that way. He wants to know whether you're going to be faithful to him all the time or not. And so he just says, be on the alert because the day is coming. You know it's coming, so be ready. So then we're going to look at three parables tonight that discuss this alertness and what we need to do. Starting with the parable of the unexpected thief. Now, I call it that. Some people call it the homeowner or something like that. But anyway, Jesus says in verse 43 through 44 of Matthew chapter 24, if you're still there, "But be sure of this, that if the head of the house had known at what time of the night the thief was coming, he would have been on the alert and would not have allowed his house to be broken into. For this reason, you also must be ready. For the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not think he will come." Now, folks, no one knowingly lets a thief break in and steal from their house. Nobody does that knowingly. Thieves break in when you're not at home for the most part. They know you're not home because they've been watching you for a long period of time. I remember back in Leveland when we were there was a family that came to church every Sunday morning, every Sunday night, every Wednesday night. And they never missed a worship service if they could help it. They were there constantly. And one time while they were on a Sunday night worship, they were there, a thief broke in and stole from them at their house while they were at church. He'd been watching and knew that they went to church every Sunday night. They never missed, and so he waited for the opportunity when they were gone to break in and steal everything. It just turned out that it was somebody they knew. They found the person later on, got their stuff back, but they knew he had been studying their habits and knew that they were always going to be at church. Now, if you're going to be robbed when you're at church, folks. That's a good thing. It's going to be all turn out all right. But in the meantime, Jesus says if you're going to be robbed, you're not going to be robbed if you're alert, if you're paying attention. Another thing that happened when I was in Clovis. There was a thief that kept breaking in and stealing from people at night. And he was stealing from the district attorney not the district attorney, the public defender, he kept breaking into his shop and stealing from his shop. His wife owned another business shop, and so he kept breaking in there. So it happened two or three times, and he always got away with stuff. And then the last time, the guy decided he was going to start sleeping in his shop every night with a shotgun. And so he did. And sure enough, the guy broke back in and almost got himself killed because the store owner happened to be there behind the shelf. And he had to sleep there for several weeks before the guy broke in again. But he was alert. He was vigilant. He was there. He managed to keep his house from being stolen, from being robbed, his business from being robbed. So thieves are going to take advantage of those who are not on the alert. They always are. And it's funny that Jesus would use that illustration to talk about being ready for his coming again. And he would talk about a thief coming in the night rather than talking about something really good and positive. He uses a negative example, a negative image, to talk about his coming again. When we first moved here, we used to do like we did every place else. When Teresa and I first got married, we lived in a little old tiny town of Lazbuddy, Texas. And the only time in Lazbuddy that you ever locked your doors was during zucchini season, and that's because everybody would open your door and stick a bucket full of zucchini in your house if you weren't careful. So that's the only time we'd lock the doors of our house. We slept with the doors unlocked at night. Our garage door was open most of the time at night. Nobody ever broke in. Every now and then some cattle would get in and start rampaging around. You hear them bumping around in the garage in the middle of the night and have to go chase them out of the garage, but that's about it. And so we loved that. And then we moved to Leveland, and it was almost that good. I mean, a little bit, we're in the city now, so we had to be a little more careful. We locked the doors at night. But half the time during the day, the garage door would stay open all day long. Nobody ever bothered a thing. We moved here to Killeen and didn't know what to expect. So we started leaving the garage door open just like we did every place else, and we found out pretty quick you don't leave the garage doors open here in Killeen. First thing that happened was somebody just walked in our back door one morning. We were about to walk out, and somebody just opened the door and walked in. I was thinking they had a clean and easy break and made some kind of excuse about, oh, I thought you were wanting me to come in. So I don't remember what she said, but anyway, it's kind of crazy. But anyway, then we started missing stuff out of the garage. And we used to have a chain-link fence at the house next door, and people could see what we had in our backyard. And if we left anything out, we could just almost guarantee that by the next day it was going to be gone. Somebody would jump the fence, take it, and go. So we learned that you have to be cautious about these things. You have to be alert and aware. And so we now never leave the garage door open, even for a couple of minutes. Several times when we've been leaving for a few hours, we have to make the block a couple times to go back and make sure we shut the garage door because we can't remember whether we did or not. And so we just make sure the garage door is always down. If you're alert, the thief can't get anything. And Jesus says, you know what? Here's what you need to be sure of. The Lord's coming again. You don't know when he's going to be coming again. You don't know the hour. You don't know the time. He's going to come when you don't think he will, so you'll never expect it. When he comes, it's not because you're going to be ready unless you're always ready. So you've always got to be on the alert. You always have to be alert all the time or you're going to miss it. When Christ comes, you won't be ready. Now, that's simple, very first of the three parables. Very simple, easy to understand. Then he moves on to a second parable that's a little bit more difficult to understand, but not much more. He says, you know, what about if you're a slave left in charge of things? How do you behave while you're gone? Well, starting in verse 45, Jesus is going to tell basically a two-pronged parable. There's actually two main characters in the parable, two main points in the parable, but they're both similar points, right? The first one is the prong of a good and sensible slave and what the good and sensible slave does when the master's gone. The second one is the prong of the wicked and careless slave and what the wicked and careless slave does when the master's gone, right? Now, again, I have to tell you, when we were kids, Mom and Dad would sometimes have to go grocery shopping and didn't want to take us all along. And we were all getting up in the, 12 years old, 13, 14 years old time frame. And so Mom and Dad would always leave and say, all right, now while we're gone, we want you to do these chores. All right? And they better be done when we get back or else. Well, that meant that we had probably 2 hours before Mom and Dad got back home to play around and mess around before we finally really fast did the jobs they gave us and then we would be done. Trouble is we never knew for how long they were going to be gone. And so more than one occasion, we played too long, didn't get it done, and then there's the comeuppance when they get home, right? If we'd just done what they told us to do in the first place, we'd have been fine. Could have done that first and then played, we'd have been okay. But no, we chose to wait and put it off. Well, Jesus tells a parable similar to that when we look at this one starting in verse 45 of Matthew chapter 24. Verse 45, Jesus says, "Who then is the faithful and sensible slave whom his master put in charge of his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is that slave whom his master finds so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you that he will put him in charge of all of his possessions." Now this is kind of an interesting parable because it sometimes gets lumped immediately with the next point, the second prong here, but it actually stands all by itself. Who's the good and faithful, sensible slave that the master puts in charge? Well, if you're sensible and if you're good and if you're faithful, then everything's going to be okay when the master goes. And he doesn't put just anybody in charge of his household. He puts faithful people in charge of his household. And so he has this faithful slave and he puts him in charge. And notice what he says, blessed. And he used that word that he uses so many times in his teaching, which means just the uttermost bliss that can be imagined on this earth is yours if you will just do what God tells you to do. So blessed is the slave whom his master finds so doing when he comes. So he doesn't know how long the master is going to be gone, but the master says, I want you to take care of business while I'm gone. I want you to provide for my household. I want you to feed my household while I'm gone. Now, this is not just slaves that he's feeding, and I think that's where we sometimes miss the idea. He's feeding the master's household. These are his people that he trusts that are part of his household. He's left them in charge. So here he says, blessed is the one whom the slave of the master finds doing so when he comes in. Now, truly I say to you, he will put him in charge of all his possessions. So if you want the trust of the master, you do what the master told you to do with small things, like feeding the family, for example, and then he'll put you in charge of everything when he comes back because he knows he can trust you in that. Now, that's the good, sensible slave. And basically, the point is the same. Jesus says, if you're ready when I come back, then you won't have anything to worry about. As long as you're ready when I come back, you won't have a thing to worry about. So we need to live our lives in such a way that we're ready when Christ comes back. So what makes the slave a good slave? Well, I want you to notice several things that Jesus says about him. Number one, he says he's faithful. He's a good and faithful slave. Faithfulness means being responsible for the master, for what the master has assigned. If we want to be ready when Jesus comes, first thing we have to be is faithful while we're here. All right? So what has God placed you in charge of? I know from past experience and from past parables that we've studied that every single one of us has assignments from the Lord. God has made assignments to you and me and everyone. So the question is, are you doing what God has assigned you to do? If not, you better find out what God assigned you to do, because there's only one person in all those parables who doesn't do very well, and that's the person who buried what God gave him, didn't do it, and then expected to be rewarded when Christ came back. All right? We don't want to be in that situation. So he says, the faithful servant is the one who's responsible for what the master has assigned. The second thing, he was a sensible slave. He was alert to the needs of the family. He realized that he had good opportunities. He used the best opportunities to faithfully serve his master, whatever those opportunities were. He was constantly working and serving for the master and was ready. And so he was blessed when the master came back because he found him as a sensible slave doing what he was supposed to do. And the third thing that I think this slave has going for him is he is dependable. He's a dependable slave. He's doing what the master has left without fail. In this case, it was feeding the household. He fed the household faithfully. Nobody ever went hungry. Nobody ever went without food. Everyone had the best they could have that the master provided for them. And so he did that because he was a faithful and a good and a dependable, sensible slave. And so his reward was to be put in charge of all the possessions. Now, sometimes we think when we get to heaven, all we're going to be doing is sitting around on clouds playing harps. Jesus never gave that suggestion anywhere. He always talks about being put in charge of more stuff when you get to heaven than when you're on the earth. That's okay, because I think I'd get really bored if all I had to do was play harp all day long. I can play instruments for a while, but that's it, and then I want to do something more productive, all right? So in this particular case, your reward is to be put in charge of all the possessions. That's what makes a slave good, is being faithful, dependable, sensible, paying attention to what's going on, not being caught flat-footed when the master comes back home. So what about the evil slave? What makes an evil slave evil? Well, just the opposite almost, but a little bit more, all right? Look at verses 48 through 51, which is the second prong of this same parable. Notice what he says. But if that evil slave, now he didn't introduce an evil slave until just now, so this is not something he talked about earlier, but right now he says, but if that evil slave, so that evil slave is any evil slave. Is any evil slave you want to talk about, an evil slave who doesn't do what the master told him to do, is what Jesus talks about next. Blessed is the good and sensible slave, but here, what about the evil slave? If that evil slave says in his heart, my master's not coming for a long time. My parents aren't coming back home for a long time. We can play and do whatever we want to do, right? And he begins to beat his fellow slaves and eat and drink with drunkards. The master of that slave will come on a day when he does not expect him and at an hour which he does not know, and will cut him in pieces and assign him a place with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Now that went south really fast, didn't it? All right. You have a good slave, a sensible slave, a trustworthy slave, and God rewards that slave with the great blessings of heaven. Then you have this wicked slave. And the wicked slave is wicked in many different reasons, many different ways, and many different reasons why he is. He has many failures, but it starts with his decision to be evil, right? You won't fail terribly bad unless you decide to be evil, and he decides to be evil. So what does he do? Well, first of all, he trusted in his own heart, right? Instead of doing what the boss commanded, instead of doing what the master commanded, he trusted in his own heart and said, the master's not going to be back for a long time. Well, the master never said that, did he? He never said it's going to be a long time before I come back. He never said you've got plenty of time to do this. He just said, I'm going. When I come back, everything better be where it needs to be, all right? So he didn't tell him that, but he trusted in his own heart rather than the commands of the master. And so he stopped remaining alert, stopped paying attention. And then when he stopped paying attention, when he stopped being alert, he started doing some other terrible stuff as well. He all of a sudden had some extra time on his hands, nothing to do for the master that he was supposed to be doing. So then he starts to beat his fellow slaves. He starts mistreating his fellow slaves. I think probably because of position and wanting that higher position, he starts taking advantage of those folks around him, starts doing what he wants to for himself instead of what the master wants. He then begins to keep bad company. And that bad company involves, in this particular translation, or this particular parable, involves eating and drinking with drunkards. So gluttony and drunkenness becomes his stay. This is what he does. And so he finally just completely forgets that the master is coming back someday. And he's so deep in his sins that when the master returns, the evil slave is not ready at all. I like the way Jesus says, you won't know when he's coming, you won't know the day, and you won't know the hour. Now if you knew the day, you could still get ready in a day and make everything look pretty good when you got there. You know the hour, even better so. You know, it's not going to catch you unawares. You know what's going on. But if you don't know the day and you don't know the hour, you don't even know the month or the year, then you've got to be always vigilant. Not so the evil slave. He didn't care. So when the master returns, he wasn't ready. Now what's the outcome for his life? Now the outcome for his life is that he is cut to pieces. Cut to pieces. And that's very violent. He isn't just fired. He isn't just dismissed. No, he's cut to pieces. And then he's assigned to the place of the hypocrites. Why the hypocrites? Well, because hypocrites are those who say they're doing something for the Lord and they're not. And I think that's the point Jesus was trying to make here. If you are the slave of the Lord, you ought to be doing what the Lord told you to do. But if you're still pretending to be a slave of the Lord, but you're not doing that, then that makes you a hypocrite. And he assigns him to the place with the hypocrites and that place where there's weeping and gnashing of teeth. And we don't need a master's degree to know what that place is, right? He's talking about hell and the eternal fires of hell and what happens to you if you're not ready when the master comes back again. So second of these parables, we find out lots of things about what it means to be alert, right? He says you've got to remain alert. Remain alert. And that means also remaining faithful. Also means remaining active in God's kingdom. Now, I just sometimes wonder what people are thinking when they're looking at their own attendance at worship, for example. And it's very deplorable at best. I wonder what happens to those folks who are the Easter and Christmas crowd, the Holly and Lily folks, right? What happens to them? I wonder what happens when folks are just thinking, I'm gonna come and I'm gonna be there, but I'm never gonna do anything. I'm just gonna sit in the pew and take up space. I just wonder what they're thinking because they've been assigned by God to do stuff. What's God assigned them to do? Only they really know that, right? They ought to be doing that. So remain alert, remain faithful. Remain active in God's kingdom. When you're not active in God's kingdom, that's when you start finding fault with everything the Christians are doing. It's when you start realizing that you don't really care about what's going on anymore. Before you know it, you're not even coming to worship anymore. And before you know that, you're not even thinking about God anymore. And before you know it, you're lost in the world as lost as you've ever been before. Right? You've got to remain active in God's kingdom. Don't keep bad company, folks. Don't keep bad company. Bad company corrupts what? Good morals. We all know that. One of the oldest proverbs that you ever learned in your life, right? Bad company corrupts. Also, the word corrupts wouldn't come to my head. Bad company corrupts good morals, and so you want to make sure that you're not hanging out with bad company. And then don't mistreat your fellow man, right? No matter what, don't ever mistreat your fellow man. Always treat other people with respect. Do for other people what you would have them do for you. That's the golden rule, almost exactly. And so don't mistreat your fellow man. And finally, and most importantly, I think, don't trust in your own ideas. Don't trust in your own ideas. Your own ideas about God. Your own ideas about what God's doing. Your own ideas about when God's going to come back, when Christ is going to come back. Don't do what some people do and try to figure out all the numbers in the Bible and add up and subtract until you figure out the day that Christ is coming again. Folks have been doing that for centuries, and they're wrong every time, right? Only God knows. Only God knows. I actually had a guy when I was in Leveland come by and show me a big chart he'd worked out. For years he'd worked on this chart, adding up all these numbers and subtracting numbers, and I kept asking him, why did you add that number? Well, just because I had to, because it was there. So by the time he got done, he figured out that the next year Christ was going to come. Now, I've been here for 18 years, going on 19 years, and Christ still hasn't come. And I was there for 8.5 years, Christ still didn't come. So your math is worthless, folks. Don't try to figure out when Christ is going to come. Just be ready when he does. Be alert, be ready, always knowing that Christ said he's going to come. Instead, just do what Christ said to do, do what God said to do, and you'll be fine. Now that takes care of the first two parables very quickly. Now we come to the most difficult of the three parables. And unfortunately, like I said, it's in chapter 25. For some reason, whoever was dividing up the Bible way back then when the monk did it into the chapters and verses that we still use to this day, he didn't realize that this chapter, this parable, goes hand in hand with the other two. They all start with the same thought. They all end with the same admonition. They all belong together. So chapter 25, this time there's 13 verses, all right? Chapter division might confuse us into not seeing the connection, but verse 13 makes it exactly clear what we're talking about. Verse 13 is the final verse in this parable, and it says this: "Be on the alert then, for you do not know the day nor the hour." That's what's tied all these parables together so far, is not knowing the day or the hour and being on the alert because of that. So we know that this is a third of this, the third of these parables, that sometimes Christ used three at a time. This is a third of those, and all three of these parables are specifically about being alert, being ready for the second coming of the Lord. Now, this one takes a more positive view. The first one was about a thief breaking in and stealing. Be alert because you never know. The second one was about wicked slaves and good slaves, and the wicked slaves didn't know, so they were cut to pieces. Now let's see what happens in the third one, because this one is about a bridegroom. So if you have chapter 25, look at verses 1 and 2, where Jesus says, "Then," and that "then" takes you back to the other two parables he just told, "then the kingdom of heaven will be compared to 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were foolish and five were prudent." Now we can stop the parable right now. You already know the outcome, don't you? You already know that the five prudent ones are going to be okay. Five foolish ones are not going to be okay. All that remains is to see what's not okay about what they did, right? So we already have the basics. That's why Jesus' parables are so wonderful, is because you can understand them in a matter of a few seconds, but then you can chew on them for years and never come to the full effect of everything that's in that parable. So it's very clear and very concise. There's an equal number of alert and non-alert individuals, right? Equal number of wise and foolish virgins. This time, they're virgins awaiting the coming of the bridegroom for the big banquet at the end of the wedding, all right? In this particular case, the photographer took way, way too long, okay? We're always going to blame it on the photographer. Whenever the bride and the groom don't get to the reception when they should, it's always the photographer's fault, right? That's what we'd like to believe. I know when Teresa and I were getting married, we decided that we didn't want anybody sitting around waiting on us to show up before they could go ahead and be having some parties. So we set up with caterers that they were going to actually cater a small little sit-down sandwich at supper for us while we were having our pictures made. Everybody could be eating sandwiches and visiting and having some food. Well, unfortunately, the person we set up the party with had been fired later on, didn't pass the information along, so we got there and the sandwiches were sitting there and everybody was sitting around, nobody's eating, and everybody was just doing what they always did, waiting on the party to get there. Well, our photographer was a very thorough photographer. We were really late getting there, and I was really upset when I found out that all the good money we paid for that reception had been wasted essentially because everybody was still waiting on us. But then I thought, well, if it was good enough for the five wise and foolish virgins, it's good enough for me, right? So here we go. Five of them were foolish and five were prudent, very clear and concise. The bridegroom obviously is Jesus, and his second coming is being discussed here because this is still in keeping with what was happening in chapter 24. So what made the difference between the wise virgins and the foolish virgins, right? You always want to know what's the difference between a wise virgin and a foolish virgin. Well, here you go. Verse 3 and 4, "When the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the prudent took oil and flasks along with their lamps." Now, folks, don't think that the foolish brought lamps with no oil in them at all, right? They had the oil that was in the lamp. That oil's got to hold them for the whole time they're waiting for the bridegroom to come. And they didn't bring any extra oil along with it. Now, foolish virgins are prepared only for a short stay. They weren't smart enough, they weren't alert enough to prepare for a long stay. They thought, well, no, nobody's going to take that long. But they were wrong, all right? They were wrong, and so they were not prepared and not planning for a long wait, and that's just foolishness. That's what Jesus says is foolishness here. It's not being ready for a long wait. The wise virgins, on the other hand, are thinking ahead. They're alert. They're ready for whatever might happen. They're prepared ahead of time because they know sometimes things happen. Sometimes bridegrooms are delayed. So we never know how long Jesus will tarry. We don't know how long. We don't know the day. We don't know the hour when he's going to show up. So we've got to be ready. And Jesus chooses to use oil in lamps as the dividing line between who are the wise and who are the foolish. I love the way Jesus tells stories. He just picks the simplest things to show the difference between those folks who are really thinking and planning and those folks who are not thinking and not planning and therefore are foolish, right? So everybody goes to sleep. I just want you to see that. You can go to sleep wisely or you can go to sleep foolishly. The question is the preparation due ahead of time, all right? Everybody goes to sleep in this period of time. It's important to note that all 10 virgins fell asleep while they're waiting for the coming of the bridegroom. That's how long he was delayed. Everybody was sleeping. As I read this parable, every time I realize that just a couple of days later, Jesus is going to be in the Garden of Gethsemane and his disciples are going to be falling asleep on him. He's going to come back and say, "Can't you watch with me for even an hour?" And they're like, "Lord, I'm sorry, we're just so sleepy, we can't stay awake." And we finally learn from one of the Gospels that it's because they are heart sore, they're sick in their souls because they know that something bad is going to happen, and so they're sleeping the sleep of those who are full of dread, which can happen that way, all right? So anyway, we find out that here are five very smart sleeping virgins and five very foolish sleeping virgins, And the only difference is that the preparations they made ahead of time were what was important, right? So look at verses 5 and 6. While the bridegroom was delaying, they all got drowsy and began to sleep. But at midnight, there was a shout, "Behold, the bridegroom, come out and meet him." Right? Now you think everything's okay, right? You think everything's okay. Because they have enough oil already, still, and the bridegroom's on his way. But that's not Jesus' point at all, all right? We have to realize that life doesn't stop while we wait. We continue on with our lives, continue doing the things we're always doing. We continue eating, we continue drinking, continue to sleep, we continue to rise from sleeping. We continue to work, we continue to vacation, we continue to live while we're waiting for Christ to come back again. But we have to live expectantly, folks. We have to live expectantly. We know while we're living that we're living waiting for Christ to come back. So you never let that go out of your mind. You never let your mind relax from the idea that someday Christ is going to be here. And so you don't do the things that you do knowing that Jesus might come just any minute, all right? We never forget that the Lord's coming, and we can't know when, and we don't know when. So we just live expectantly, sure that any minute he's going to arrive. Look at verses 7 through 9. All those virgins rose, trimmed their lamps. The foolish said to the prudent, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the prudent answered, "No, there will not be enough for us and you too. Go ahead and go instead to the dealers and buy some for yourself." Now, I'm always one of these really prudent guys who's thinking, could they just like walk hand in hand, the virgins then, with one lantern between them? Would that not still give them enough light? Well, that's not the point at all, folks. It's not what they could have done otherwise. It's what they should have done in the first place, all right? We can try to manufacture ideas about what we could do instead of what Christ said to do, or be ready when Christ is coming, but you can never substitute for being ready, right? So their lamps are going out, and everybody's got to have a lantern. Everybody's got to have their own lantern, apparently. And then we think, well, you know, they could just give a little bit of oil, just long enough, because the bridegroom's on his way. The bridegroom's almost there. Just give them enough oil so that they can have enough oil for their lamps, and then they'll be all right. Well, that doesn't work either, okay? Because I'm wondering myself, why are they so selfish, right? Why can't they just share a little bit? Because we're always taught to share, right? Sharing's good. But these are not sharing-type virgins. They're saying, no, we don't have enough for ourselves and you both, so you just go and buy some yourself and send them off, all right? Well, first of all, we have to realize from the parable, there's no last chance. No last chance. We know when they go to buy the oil, it's no good. How many oil merchants are there open at midnight, first of all? They've got to look a lot of places to find those oil merchants. So anyway, number two is, there's not time. The bridegroom's almost there. So there's no last chance to go and buy oil. When the bridegroom arrives, everything's done. That's the end of it. All judgment is going to take place immediately. And if you're not ready when he shows up, it's too late. Right? Too late. And that's the point Jesus tries to make. He's not talking about being polite and kind here. He's talking about being ready. So Jesus uses that brief discussion to further stress the need to be ready for his second coming. No one can get ready for you. That's the most important thing we have to realize. Nobody can get ready for you. The point is, no one can be ready for you. You have to be ready yourself. Nobody's going to be able to stand in the line of judgment for you. Nobody's going to be able to stand before the judge and be judged for you. You have to be judged by yourself. So whatever you do on this earth, whether you're ready or not ready, you're going to have to stand in judgment for that, and there's no last chances. There's no last chances. There's no second that Jesus appears and the trumpet sounds, opportunity for you to say, oops, I messed up, I better repent now, right now, and then we're okay. Right? Not enough time to dunk you in water instantly when Christ is coming, because you never were baptized beforehand. There's no time. As soon as Christ appears, the trumpet sounds, boom, judgment happens, it's done, it's finished. Sometimes people get the idea that judgment day is going to go on and on and on and on for eternity because Jesus is going to instantly or individually judge each person. Not true. It's going to happen instantly, at the twinkling of an eye. And then we're going to either go to be with God or we're going to go down to hell and stay there for eternity, all right? So we cannot be saved by the merits of others. Only our own preparedness, only our own alertness, only our own faithfulness, only our own obedience will result in our salvation and blessing from God. We have to do it ourselves. No one can do it for us. Some suggest the sleep in this parable, by the way, is the sleep of death. Everyone dies. And I can see that. I can appreciate that. I don't have to have it that way, but I can appreciate it, all right? So when you die, if you die unprepared, then when the bridegroom awaits and you wake up, it's too late, okay? So that's very possible. However, it doesn't have to be that way. It just is possible to be that way. But here's the whole point. Once the door's shut, it's too late. Once the door shut, it's too late. Now, folks, as I read this time, I guess this is the first time this ever really occurred to me. So maybe I'm premature. I haven't studied it out carefully enough. But here's what I think. All right. Earlier in the discourse in chapter 24, earlier Jesus was talking about what was happening when Noah was preparing the ark during the days that Noah was preparing. I said people were eating and drinking, giving in marriage, being married. They're just doing life like they always did. But the second the door was shut in the ark, it was too late for them to be saved. Period. And I'm thinking that's what Jesus is now thinking back to that, bring it forward to here. All of these things seem to tie back to the idea that when God is done with judgment, when God begins judgment, it's too late. Okay? So for all those who are on that, who are waiting for that ark, I want you to realize that God's the one that shut the door. Somebody was very astute to notice that the other day in our lessons, and I don't remember who it was now. One of you guys talked about the fact that God was the one that shut the door, all right? So when God shut the door shut. It's not going to open until God opens the door, all right? And here's the deal for us. When Christ comes again, God's going to open the door. He's going to let people in, He's going to shut the door, and it's too late after that, all right? God shut the door. Don't you suppose, as the waters begin to rise, there are a whole lot of people that thought, you know, this water's getting out of control. Maybe I should have been on that boat, all right? Don't you think at that period of time, there's a lot of folks saying, why didn't I buy tickets when I had the chance, all right? But no, nobody bought tickets. Nobody helped Noah build. Nobody was there to help him. They were there probably to criticize him, but nobody was there to help him. And everybody just thought about that crazy guy building the boat down there in the valley until the water started to rise, and then they're like, why didn't we get ready for this? Noah was preaching to us for 100 years, telling us this was going to happen, telling us what was going on. We didn't listen to a word he said. So now we're not ready. Door shut, we can't get on. No amount of hammering on the decks of the ark, no amount of praying, no amount of anything is going to help in that period of time. And the same is prepared. The same is true if you're unprepared at death or unprepared when Christ comes again. If you're unprepared, whenever that happens, then you're gone. Now, as we conclude the parable, the rest of this is actually part of the parable, but it almost stands alone as its own parable. But I'm still counting it as just three parables. But here we go. There's the feast, and then there's the fools, all right? So the tail end of this parable is this. While they were going away to make the purchase, when the foolish virgins were going away to make the purchase, the bridegroom came. Those who were ready went in with him to the wedding feast, and the door was shut. All right? It's like the ark was shut, door was shut, too late. If you're outside, you're never getting in. All right? Now, this is not a situation where you can then open up to whoever shows up. Nobody's going to crash the heavenly party. All right? Nobody's going to be allowed to do that. If you're not in the place when the door's shut, then you're just out and it's too late. Later, the other virgins came also, and they finally got their oil. They found it someplace. Finally show up, or maybe they gave up and just came with empty lanterns. I don't know. But anyway, they show up at the door, and they begin to bang on the door. Lord, Lord, open up for us. Lord, Lord, open up for us. And not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, Jesus said a long time ago. This is the last week of his life, very close to the first of his life. He said, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, Sermon on the Mount, chapter 7, Matthew, Lord, Lord, not everyone who says to me, Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom. But only he who does the will of my Father who's in heaven. Here he is in the last few days of his life on the earth, and he brings them back to that thought. They're going to knock on the door and say, Lord, Lord, open up for us. Open up for us. But he answered, truly I say to you, I don't know who you are. He said the same thing earlier on in that discourse. Same thing. He said, I don't know who you are. But Lord, didn't we cast out demons in your name? Didn't we do miracles in your name? Didn't we say things, good things about you? Well, I didn't know you because you didn't know me. All right? Now he says, you weren't ready. You weren't ready. Be on the alert then, Jesus concludes. Be on the alert then. You do not know the day nor the hour. You don't know. So the question is, do we take the point seriously or not? Are we going to take the point seriously enough to be ready when Christ comes? You know, Jesus doubted that because he actually made the statement at one point in time, will the Son of Man find anyone watching when he comes? Will he find anyone faithful on the earth when he comes? Really? Well, here's why we want to be alert at all times. If you're not alert and you're not ready, you miss out on eternity just because you were not alert and you weren't ready. So let's be alert and let's be ready. Look at 1 Peter chapter 5 and verse 8. But Peter sums up these thoughts by saying this, be of sober spirit. Be of sober spirit. Be paying attention to what's going on. Don't go through life wandering around in some fog like you don't have a clue what's going on. Be on the alert because your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a lion, a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. I read a wonderful quote this last week that I forgot to write down and I didn't include it, but one of the ex-presidents who went on a safari in Africa said something along the lines of, your only friend in that place is a big gun. There are two kinds of people. People with big guns and people who are in the bellies of the prey, you know, or prey for the animals. And so basically, you've got two chances here. You can either be ready, you can have a big gun, you can be alert, you can be paying attention, or you can be in the belly of the prey, or you can be prey in the belly of the aggressor, whatever, the devil, all right, just the roaring lion. You can be his dinner. So you just have to be ready. And so Peter sums it up that way. Be alert, be on the alert, be sober. Keep a sober spirit. Sober is not the same thing as somber. We can still laugh and have fun. We can enjoy each other, but we need to be alert at all times and aware that we're here for Christ. And look at 1 Thessalonians 5:5-7, which is when Paul sums this thought up when he says, you're all sons of the light and sons of day. We're not of the night nor of the darkness. So then let us not sleep as others do, but let us be alert and sober. For those who sleep do their sleeping at night, and those who get drunk at night. In the nighttime, when you're supposed to be sleeping and you're not, is when all kinds of trouble gets into your head and into your mind. you start doing all kinds of things that are terrible. But we're sons of the day. We're sons of the daylight. We're sons of the day. We're sons of the sun. And so in that case, we ought to be alert and paying attention. And therefore not going to sleep without preparation ahead of time for the coming of Christ. I just can't stress strongly enough that we don't know the hour of the day. We don't know when our life is going to end. We see it happens all the time. When people didn't expect to die, and they died suddenly, and they weren't ready. You know, I mean, one of the saddest funerals I've ever done was for a young mother whose husband was deployed, and she had just had a baby alone because the husband was deployed, and she was very sick, and she stood up with the baby, and she passed out and landed on the baby, and she died, smothered the baby, and killed the baby as well. I had to do that funeral, folks, and that was such a sad funeral because the husband didn't know what to do with himself. They weren't ready. They weren't in Christ. They weren't members of the Lord's body. They had no hope, no place to go, nothing to be a part of. And so they found that death to be a terrible thing for them. Now I'm sure the baby was okay because the baby was an innocent child, but the grown-ups should have known better, right? We don't ever know. We don't ever know when our day's going to come. Terrible things happen on this world because this world is fallen. So be ready. Be ready. I plead with you, be ready. When Christ comes, make sure that you are ready for Christ to come. So you don't have to be worried about it. You don't have to be looking for oil. You know what you got. You know you got it. You're ready for Christ to come. Be ready. Be alert. Stay that way. If you fell asleep during the sermon, I'm sorry for you. All right. In the meantime, we're going to close with an invitation. If you're here tonight and you need to do anything about your salvation, if you need to be baptized, then won't you come and do that tonight? If you need to make your heart right with God, if there's anything you need, if there's anything we can do for you, let us know as we stand and sing the selected song.